Hey everybody, I'm Andy.
And I'm Sean.
And this is the Commander's Brew.
This week, Teneb the Harvester.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Commander's Brew, episode 79.
Oh, it's great to be here. It's great to have you. This has been a challenging one.
This has
thus
been
far.
A difficult one.
So those of you watching on YouTube, first I'll say that like we almost finished one, but you wouldn't have been able to watch it on YouTube because we forgot to record.
Yeah, and that's because before that, we were recording one and the camera just stopped working.
Yep.
So we're on a webcam. Which is a good webcam.
It's a decent webcam.
It's a webcam, but we're having problems with the focus.
Yeah.
Listen, audio listener, don't even worry about it. We had to redo all the audio too, just because we might as well for starting over again.
It doesn't go with the video.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you're problem free, really. You guys have been...
Well, let's knock on some wood because we haven't uploaded it yet, man. Let's hope iTunes is...
I believe that the third time is certainly the charm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're watching on YouTube, you probably noticed there's a new overlay. There's a new look to our show. And that's because we had a big opening and like pack opening for our Patreon goal that we hit.
Yeah, thank you again. We'll keep doing cool stuff like this. We reached a milestone, so we cracked a box of Khans of Tarkir. And we cracked a box of Aether Revolt that got to us on time thanks to the Wizard's Tower shipping that post haste.
Yeah, Dave sent it through UPS and it got here on time.
United Parcel Service.
Ahead of time, actually. It came the day before he said it was going to get here.
Oh.
So that was pretty cool.
Great. There was a moment where I was like, I hope we get it in time. I don't want to not open because it's release weekend, right? And there's not a lot of mail on the weekend.
Exactly. So yeah, we did. We got it in time. It was perfect. It was great.
Oh man.
We opened a lot of cool cards. We opened Planar Bridges. We opened Tezzeret.
A Planar Bridge.
Well, yes.
Okay. One of each. But you know what I think is really cool? Out of that whole box, we got Tezzeret.
Yep.
We got the token that is that little mana thing that he makes.
Yeah.
And we got his emblem.
That's true. That's pretty cool. We also got all of the legendaries from Aether Revolt except Yeheni.
And
but
the
also all of their And also we got all their expertises.
All of their expertises.
So that was fun. That was neat.
That was neat. A couple of fatal pushes.
Oh, yeah. We did get a couple of those, didn't we?
Hot card right now.
Very hot card for those modern players out there. And we got another live event coming up.
Don't forget, this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our next Brew and Brawl. We do one of these the last Sunday of every month. January 29th is this one. Shortly after you're hearing this, if you're one of the quick downloaders, if you tend to wait a couple of weeks to get to these, then you might have missed this one. But I'm not going to try to imagine when you're listening to this. There's too many possibilities.
There's far too many.
Is there an infinite number of...
No, it would be a finite number, right? Well, no, I guess time is infinite, so they could wait for a billion years and listen to it.
Right. And then if we also want to divide time down to infinitely small increments that like if you start it a moment later, then yeah, that's a new time you can listen to
it. It's yeah.
Guys, this is the third string banter you're getting. At right now. We had great jokes about eggs.
We talked about eggs for like 20 minutes.
Oh, my God. We pretended it
was. We had an egg podcast.
Yeah, we did 2 minutes of a fictional egg podcast. It was full of puns. It was great. I loved it, and it's gone forever.
It's gone forever, and we're not going to try and recreate the magic. We're just gonna fly by the seat of our pants, like we always do, and create some new magic.
I
am thinking about eggs.
I know. I'm going to say
that's just natural.
If there's enough demand, maybe we could do a quick like 10-minute bonus episode on eggs
of the egg podcast.
Egg cast. Yolks on you.
The yolks on you. This is the stuff we did, but that was a new one.
That was
so
a
good.
New one.
Good
yeah.
for you.
You trying to come up with a new one?
Yeah.
We used all the good ones.
We used all the good ones.
We
last
used them
time.
All already.
Excellent pun, I would say.
Yeah.
I don't think I said excellent.
Nope. maybe not that exact version.
Yeah. Okay. So we mentioned how sweet it was to get that package from Wizards Tower real quick. Well, guess what? We got an ad from them. Here it is.
Okay, so like everybody's showing off their expertises. You know, Burrell's expertise, Rishkar's expertise, etc. What about good old Boyd's expertise? Changing your flat tires on your vehicles, no sweat. Come on down. You know, that's what I gotta do for that. Everybody got an expertise. You don't hear everyone else bragging about it like a SRAM over there just bragging about his expertise. We all got expertise. You know who else has expertise? The Wizards Tower, wizardtower.com. Yes, their expertise is getting you great magic singles and free shipping. Singles $15 or less in Canada or $10 in the US. Their expertise is also coupon code Tower of Brews. Get you another 5% off and 3% kickback on your next order. That's a pretty good expertise. Where's that card? Right? Where's my expertise card? You know, we only care about some expertise. Anyway, I'm glad it's a revolt because I feel like breaking a window.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I see what Boyd's saying.
Let's all look inward and find our own expertises.
Yeah, I would say I have an expertise.
Me too.
What's yours?
Frying eggs.
What's mine?
Poaching eggs.
Yeah.
That's how we
this
got here.
This was a real moment last time.
We were so surprised that we came up with eggs.
Something eggs related was both of our expertises. Not like anything having to do with magic or like performing or anything like that we actually do. No. Sean and I, we're Eggman.
You know, I used to joke around.
I just thought of the name of our podcast. We are the Eggman.
Yep. Lock it in.
Lock it in.
And we won't have to change the Twitter image when we start the tweeter. You know, you're an egg when
you call
start.
Your phone?
My tweeter?
You're a tweeter.
I use it more for that than most other things.
That's true. You're right. We can leave the Twitter image.
Yeah, whatever it
the
gives.
The default one. We are the Eggman.
Yes.
Okay, well, we did get to eggs again.
Follow us on iTunes.
Yeah, the Eggman.
Yes. But no. Okay, but here, seriously. We're brewing decks. Yeah. Two angles on a theme. And this week, the theme is just a single commander, Teneb the Harvester. We're building two different angles on that. We haven't done this in a while.
No, I know. This is like the original deal, right?
Yeah, this is the original idea that we started with. So Teneb, for those of you who don't know, three. Black, green, white. It's a 6 CMC in Obzon colors. Legendary creature, dragon, 6/6, flying. Whenever Teneb the Harvester deals combat damage to a player, you may pay 2 and a black. If you do, put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control.
Yes. Remember last time when you said you don't know why?
Why don't we see more Teneb decks? Because...
And I said...
Carador
exists because Carador Ghost Chieftain is just a better version of this card.
Yeah,
and it's something that the professor mentioned on our show when he was here. He said that he doesn't like the specifically designed for commander cards because they make cards like Teneb obsolete, basically, right? So Carador came along, and it just now means if you're going to build an Abzan graveyard deck, you're not going to use Teneb because it's just not nearly as good.
Yeah.
Which is a good point, right? And it kind of sucks, but there is hope for Teneb because it's fun to work within restrictions, right? It's fun to not just have your cake and eat it too, which is basically what Carador is. So it's fun and you get creative and you have to think of different angles and different things to make Teneb work and be as good, and that's where deck building is the most fun, and that's kind of the point of our whole show, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the side surprise of doing a podcast on budget, and this is just a different limitation.
Yeah.
Just don't use Carador.
Well, right? We've talked a lot about Carador. He's one of my favorite commanders, so...
He's undeniably excellent, but, I will say, if you whip out a Carador deck, people are going to come at you pretty hard pretty quick.
Yeah.
it's going to be hard to throw off the scent. But if you whip out a Teneb deck that's essentially doing the same thing, but maybe not quite as efficiently, I think you're going to get a pass on that.
Yeah.
And if you can just kind of like distract long enough and people forget like, oh my God, he's doing it. This is basically Caridor. He's just getting everything back every time he wants.
Yeah, I agree. People are probably going to not be as intimidated by that. Also, Teneb is a 6-mana commander. Yeah. That's a lot. Caridor, so you're not going to even get him out very early.
That's true. That's true. Caridor gets rolling right away.
Caridor does get rolling right away because of his crazy ability.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's fine. We don't need to talk about Caridor anymore. We're talking about our boy Teneb here.
Our boy Teneb. Let's talk about the two angles. The angle I went with, taking advantage of its ETB recursion, is an allies strategy. Allies.
Allies. That's interesting. I went with an interesting thing as well. It's called, I just wrote it here, called Benchwarmers. And what that means is, since like Teneb is the sort of B version of Caridor, as we've already talked about, I took a lot of, like, he reminded me of that, and so I took a lot of cards that are the B versions of other cards, or are those, you know, just those last cuts that you would usually put in to an Abzan graveyard style deck, and just they never seem to quite make it in. Like, those are the cards that this is the guy sitting on the bench, the B squad, ready to come in case someone gets injured or in case something gets banned or something like that. These guys are going to be the ones who fill in, right?
What was that movie where the whole football team was in a bus crash and they had to give the whole team was a B team? I think it was a sad movie.
Remember the Titans.
Is that
yeah.
it? Is
yeah,
that
the one? I think so. They
This is that deck.
No. Was that Remember the Titans? No.
I don't know. It was a sad movie because the
Remember
whole
the Titans
team
is a football. Yeah, I know what you mean. It was
like in the 50s or something like that. Everyone wore hats.
Yeah.
All the men.
It's not
had
Remember
hats.
The Titans. It's something else.
Remember the Eagles. Remember
no.
that time?
No.
Remember, hey, you guys remember?
I don't know. You know what? I'm not going to remember it, but I do.
Remember that movie?
I do remember it.
Yeah, yes. This is the deck equivalent of that movie.
Yeah.
If Caridor and that deck, like if you were traveling and you put Caridor in your like checked bag and the check bag got sent somewhere else by accident and all you had on you was your like Teneb deck in your jacket pocket. You're like,
yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I guess I'm using this.
Okay. I'm going to the tournament with this. Come on, Bad News Bears. Let's go.
Yeah, like, man.
That's what these guys are. They're a ragtag group of misfits.
Always the team you want to win.
Exactly. They're the underdogs. And that's what Teneb is, big time.
Yeah, man. Let's team Teneb all
team
the way.
Team Teneb. Okay, okay.
Okay, let's break it down. So the ally version, how am I doing this? I'm using a bunch of allies. I'm using Teneb's ability to bring them back. I'm using other graveyard recursion to bring them back as well. I would like to highlight a couple of key allies. Number one, Greypelt Hunter. Greypelt Hunter is a 3 and a green human warrior ally, 2/2 with trample, but whenever he or another ally enters the battlefield, you get a +1/+1 counter on this guy.
I've said this about this card before. This guy gets, and I mean, and I don't just mean in the previous versions of this specific episode we've done, Greypelt Hunter always gets much bigger than you think he's going to be, and he's always a lot better than you think he is.
And his native trample is what makes it good, because exactly. He's going to get pretty big pretty fast, because we're usually doing more than one ally a turn once we get rolling. Let's talk about Vastwood Animist, 2 and a green, Elf Shaman Ally. It's a 1/1 with a tap ability. Target land you control becomes an XX elemental creature until end of turn, where X is the number of allies you control. This is another way to get a giant monster on the board. It's Greypelt Hunter was dependent on other allies appearing after him. Vastwood Animist is just like, how many we got? We up to 10? Cool, we got 10. We got 15? Even better. Are we down to 6? Still pretty good.
Oh, okay. We're down to 2? Hey, that's not great. Hey, I'm the only guy here? This sucks.
I'm lonely.
I'm in trouble.
But one guy who we want to back them up is Hagra Diabolist. 4 and a black, 3/2, Ogre Shaman Ally. Whenever Hagra Diabolist or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you may have target player lose life equal to the number of allies you control. This is sort of an exponential kind of thing, right? Like, you cast him, maybe you do 3. One more ally, you do another 4. one more ally, you do another five. That you don't need to do too many before you can kill a person.
This guy ends games. This is one of the best cards in any ally deck.
Yeah, and Teneb's going to bring him back. He's a top target for Teneb to bring back almost every time.
Oh, awesome.
I want to talk about a few. Like, I could go on about other allies. Who cares? They all get bigger. They all do cool things. They make your team indestructible, lifelink, whatever, bonuses. But there's a few cards in here who are not allies who I just wanted in there because I'm like, man, let's just do this.
man, I like this card.
Like, this guy may not need to be in here, but I love him so much. Gonti, Lord of Luxury, 2BB for a legendary Aetherborn Rogue, Death Touch, 2/3. So basically, when you cast Gonti, when Gonti enters the battlefield, you exile 4 cards off an opponent's library, pick one of them face down, and then you put one of them face down on your side, and for the rest of the game, as long as it remains exiled, you can cast it using mana of any color. Awesome.
Yeah, it's sweet. Gonti. Gonti's cool. Very cool ETB ability. This is when we talked about Gonti when we first saw him, we figured he was a pretty decent commander, but like really good in a reanimator style deck because that's how black abuses ETB effects. So this is perfect.
Cannot resist.
Yeah.
Did I mention? I didn't, but I think it's still in the archives of our Twitch channel. I did a stream. I drafted a Gonti with a lot of bounce, and I bounced him 6 times in one match, like over 3 games. 6 bounces.
Cool.
It was Reddick.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Moving on. Glimmerpoint Stag, 2, white, elk, vigilance, 3/3. When Glimmerpoint Stag enters the battlefield, exile another target permanent. Probably one of our allies. Return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So you do get to the end step. Is that, I don't know if that Felidar cat is going to be better or not. The question would be whether or not that cat can do any permanent or just your permanent.
Oh, okay. So there's a little bit of added bonus there. Felidar Guardian, you may exile another target permanent you control.
Okay. So the Glimmerpoint Stag's drawback is that it comes back on end step. Whereas Felidar Guardian's drawback is it has to be something you control. So in an emergency, we can bounce some ugly thing with a million enchantments on it with Glimmerpoint Stag.
Yeah. Glimmerpoint Stag is a 3/3 with vigilance, too. Like, that's not huge or anything, but it is better than the 1/4 that doesn't have vigilance.
Yeah. Yeah, fair. Well, so we want to do flick. So he is. This is a creature with its own ETB effect that does that flickers ETB effects. This is exactly what we want to be doing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Reclamation Sage. See, because we don't have red, we don't get to interact with enchantments or artifacts using our allies. So we got to bring in some non-ally. We got to do some contract work here. Reclamation Sage, 2 and a green, Elf Shaman, 2/1. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target artifact or enchantment. And we will ETB this over with Teneb if we need to. Toot sweet.
Yeah. One of the best ETB artifact enchantment destroyers, this guy, for sure.
Yeah. And then, so let's talk about a couple of ways to get some more recursion, because we will likely end up with more than a few creatures in our graveyard, and we can only bring back one per turn with Teneb. Maybe we don't have Teneb. So let's cast things like Ever After. 4BB for a sorcery. We can return 2 target creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Each of those is a black zombie in addition to its other colors and types. Put Ever After on the bottom of its owner's library. 2 allies entering the battlefield at the same time is significantly better than them entering one by one. You get double bonus and they all see all of them. So a lot of allies care about the number of allies or plus encounters. So you're going to go from 5 to 6. So some of them see 5 and then they all see 6. And the one that is number 6 never saw anyone but himself enter the battlefield. But when they both enter at the same time, the whole team sees 2 6s.
Is it worth putting like Eerie Interlude in these types of decks?
Eerie Interlude is in this deck. Absolutely. We may get to it later in some of the stars of the deck, I think. Yeah. To get them all to enter at the same time is just bonkers, right?
Right.
We love, like, imagine if Hagrid Diabolist is on the board and then we add 5 allies, he does 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5. That's a significant amount of damage. But if we blink all 5 of those at once, he does 5, then 5, then 5, then 5, then 5.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because they see them all at the same time.
Ah.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't know that.
And then one more awesome recursion spell in Obzon colors, just Orzhov, really. Unburial Rites. 4 and a black, sorcery. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, and we can flash back for 3 and a white. 2 casts off of one spell. That's a deal we like in this format.
Nice. I'm just looking for something right now.
You want me to look it up while you start?
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Okay.
I found it.
Okay. I want, because we know from the last time we recorded this episode. for me, it's the Benchwarmers. It's the B team. So let's see what we got here. It's all the guys that probably wouldn't make the cut, or maybe it's because they have a better version or whatever, right? So the first one on the list here is Loxodon Hierarch. Not a bad card in its own right, but you'll see what I'm talking about. 2 green and a white for a 4/4. When Loxodon Hierarch enters the battlefield, you gain 4 life, and it has the ability to pay green and white and sacrifice it, and you can regenerate each creature you control. So the reason I included Loxodon Hierarch here is because I feel like it's a slightly worse version of a card called Dauntless Escort. Right, which is 3 mana for a 3/3, and you just sacrifice it, and creatures get indestructible. Right,
so not regenerate.
No, not regenerating. So definitely indestructible is better. It doesn't cost anything to do this once you have your Dauntless Escort down.
Free activation,
and it's cheaper in general. What you get with Loxodon Hierarch, you get a little ETB effect, right? So we're building an Abzan graveyard deck, so ETB effects is what we're doing. You can't get away from that, really. So we're going to gain 4 life with it, and it's a little bit bigger, and it has this ability to regenerate. Now, that's obviously not as good, but the gaining 4 life is not nothing here. So this card is actually still quite good in this deck, and it ends up doing basically the same thing. But you're probably going to include Dauntless Escort if you're building a normal deck over this guy, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine and makes a lot of sense to me. Next, we have Guardian of Cloverdell. Now, do you know who this guy is? Okay, let me read him first. 5/2 green for a 4/5. He's a Treefolk Shaman. He says, when Guardian of Cloverdell comes into play, put 3/1/1 white Kithkin Soldier creature tokens into play, and he has the ability to pay green, sack a Kithkin, you gain 1 life.
So let's see. He's a 7 mana green creature that creates tokens when he enters the battlefield. I think this reminds me of Avenger of Zendikar.
Yes, this is Avenger of Zendikar, exactly. A much worse version of Avenger of Zendikar.
Well, if I may, 3/1/1 white Kithkin Soldier creature tokens. If you only had, like, a 1/1 Kithkin is better than a 0/1 plant.
That's true. And a lot of times you do only get to get those plants with the Avenger because someone deals with it or exiles it or whatever before you get a chance to play a land. But the ceiling on Avengers in the car is much higher, and you're going to get a lot more 0/1 plants than you are going to get 1/1 Kithkins.
But okay, but I'll throw this out there, though. How many times, I can remember a game specifically we had where it was all about Avengers in Zendikar.
True.
Cast, kill, reanimate, kill, clone, cast. Like we just played with the same Avengers in Zendikar over and over, just sending them around the table everywhere. So, like, no one's going to do that with Guardian of Cloverdell.
Well, I think you're right, especially if there is an Avenger of Zendikar out.
Oh, sure.
But then you're also probably going to use your Teneb to reanimate their Avenger of Zendikar over your own Guardian of Cloverdell, right?
That's true.
That proves that it's just better.
I do think the most simple strategy to win a game of Commander, in my opinion, is always look like you're in second place.
Yes, that's
right.
This deck is a second place deck.
Like, you do not want to look like you're in first place in Commander, because that's how you draw the attention of the table. You always want to look like you're just behind people.
Yeah, for sure.
When you are actually not.
So this is a good way to do it. I do think Guardian of the Cloverdell is actually a good card. It just the fact that it's not as good as Avenger of Zendikar doesn't mean it's not good or not worth putting into decks. It still is a 4/5 that enters and makes 3/1/1 tokens. You can use those for sack fodder. You can use them to block. You can use them in a more token strategy if you're going to build your Abzan Reanimator deck that way, which you for sure can and is actually probably a really fun deck to build. I think that this guy for sure can belong in a deck like that. Guardian of Cloverdale is not a bad card, and it should be maybe considered for, like I said, those types of decks. Next, we have Gaze of Granite. It's X, black, black, green for a sorcery that says destroy each non-land permanent with converted mana cost X or less. Do you know what this one's the worst version of?
Pernicious Deed.
Pernicious Deed, exactly. Pernicious Deed is an enchantment that you pay X. Well, it's like three to cast it, and then you pay X, sack it, and it does the same thing. But it doesn't hit Planeswalkers.
Yes, it lists the card types.
Exactly. It's like a Nevernurl's disc.
Wait, does it also do enchantments?
Yeah, it says creatures, enchantments, artifacts.
Okay.
So Gaze of, so it destroys itself.
Yes.
Well, because you have to sack it anyway, so whatever, never mind. Gaze of Granite is a sorcery, so the beautiful thing about Pernicious Deed is that you can recur it. If you get a little enchantment recursion, it can be a very, very powerful card that keeps coming back from the graveyard. Gaze of Granite, it's tougher to recur those sorceries, especially in these colors, so you're less likely to do that. But there is a little bit of upside in that it comes out of nowhere, whereas a Pernicious Deed sits on the battlefield, lets people know it's there. Like I said, this can hit some other permanents that are not listed on Pernicious Deed. Overall, Pernicious Deed, I'd say, certainly is a better card, but Gaze of Granite is something that we overlook a lot, and I think it is a very effective board wipe, especially if you have a lot of big creatures that you're reanimating.
That's right.
You can wipe a board of tokens, of smaller, just smaller creatures in general. Many times I've looked at a board where I go, okay, if I pay five with my Gaze of Granite right now, I destroy his entire board except for like two creatures that aren't even that good, and then I get to keep everything except for these two little guys that I didn't even really want anymore. Or am happy to have them go because I'll just reanimate them anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So Gaze of Granite is a very good card. And you might even consider running it beside Pernicious Deed as opposed to
I think flavor-wise, it's a bit better because turning people into stone as a Medusa is cool. And I don't know what pernicious means.
Okay, well, there you go. That's Sean's take on it. next, we have Magister of Worth, which is a 4 white black for a 4/4 flying angel. And she has Will of the Council. Whenever it enters the battlefield, starting with you, each player votes for Grace or Condemnation. If Grace gets more votes, each player returns each creature card from his or her graveyard to the battlefield. If Condemnation gets more votes, or the vote is tied, you destroy all creatures except Magister of Worth. This is a great card. I think this card should be seen more often. This is not a version of anything specifically. This, to me, has always been a classic 62nd, 63rd card that I always end up being like, okay, I'll cut Magister of Worth, I guess. Because right. It's, you know, with choice cards, with voting cards, it's usually not going to be what you want, generally. But there are definitely, especially in Commander, it's a little more, you know, it's a little more out there. You make some politic, you know, if you're out there politicking and making moves, you know, you can get people to vote with you, right? So, and it's generally going to, no matter what side is chosen, is actually going to be better for you, whether it's wiping the board and getting all your things in the graveyard and then bringing them back out again, or whether it's bringing everything out of the graveyard. So, in general, I think this card's very good, and I'm kind of surprised it doesn't see a bit more play. But then I'm surprised at myself because I don't play very often, but maybe I will.
Yeah. Real like barely warming, barely a bench warmer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like she's not warming the bench because she's out there, like, you know, warming her arm up. Like, she's like throwing pitches in the bullpen.
She's an up and comer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's like a prospect.
Yeah, like, because like you look at the bench, Magister of Worth is actually standing up on a couple of steps, you know, with the baseball bat over your back shoulders doing the twist. Twisting back and forth.
Getting ready to come in the game.
She's expecting to play any second now, and I think she might be right.
Well, she's been on the bench for quite a while. maybe she's not making it out. And, of course, then there's a whole like category of B-list cards and creatures, and they're the Maguses, and we have got Magus of the Disc here. 2/2 white for a 2/4. He comes into play tapped, and you pay 1 and tap him to destroy all artifacts, creatures, and enchantments. Just what Nev's Disc does, but on a creature. And these are just usually considered as, you know, they're not as good as because they're on a creature. But in Commander, and especially with a reanimator deck, these are actually better on a creature. You want this ability on a creature. Especially Nev's Disc, you can't even do it the first turn it comes in anyway. So it's not like you're even really losing anything by putting it on a creature, except for the fact that it's easier to remove or exile or whatever. But in this deck and in decks with sack outlets, you're that's not a, as big as a concern for you. So this, Magus of the Will, some other cards are awesome in these decks.
Yeah. It's they really don't want you to do this one turn. Not only is it a tap ability that he has to do, he also comes into play tapped. So it's like you got to jump through so many hoops to do this as a surprise. It's like, relax, white. relax, Nev magic. Campbell's disc.
Nev Campbell's disc. That's great. Next, we have Skullwinder. Two and a green as a death touch 1/3 snake. It says when Skullwinder enters the battlefield, return target card from your graveyard to your hand, then choose an opponent. That player returns a card from his or her graveyard to his or her hand. This is the point last time when we were recording this that we realized we were not recording.
We've done it, folks. We have crossed. So from now on, every joke that we make
is new.
You can guarantee is a new joke.
Exactly. What's Skullwinder a version of?
Eternal Witness.
Eternal Witness. Yes, of course. And arguably better, but
I think so.
Definitely not as used. And I think mostly people are going to put in Eternal Witness because, you know, they're always worried about giving stuff to their opponents. But Skullwinder can... it can work out in your favor where you help, you know, if you're behind, you help another person who's behind, and that'll take down the person who's ahead. Like you said, you never want to appear in first place. You'll never get a Skullwinder from your opponents if you're in first place.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So, you know, but also, of course, there's an argument to be made that it's not as good as Eternal Witness because it does give an opponent something. Of course, we hear that. And like I said, this guy's not as widely as played as Eternal Witness, no question about it. So let's pop him in the B team and let's maybe have him overachieve and show people what he can really do.
Put me in coach.
Yeah, he really wants to go in coach. He really wants to go into your skull.
Ugh.
And live.
And wind around.
Yeah, he's a dirty old snake. Okay, anyways, this card's great. We always say this. We're surprised we don't see it more often, and then neither of us put it in any decks.
Put it in a deck.
Did you?
I'm starting to put it in.
I put it in one recently, yeah.
I got it in two.
And finally, just a straight-up worse version of a card that is often used in Abzan Reanimator decks. We have Slum Reaper, which is 3 and a black for a 4/2. When Slum Reaper enters the battlefield, each player sacrifices a creature. So this guy is Fleshbag Marauder or Merciless Executioner. Costs more, is bigger, because those guys are 3/1s. This guy's a 4/2.
4/2. Is that really bigger? Like, I mean, one, yes. Yeah. By definition, yes. But like...
yeah, Sean, it is one power and one toughness larger. However... right. Those guys, when you ever attack with those guys are immediately sacrificed to their own ability every time.
Almost every time.
Because you want them in the graveyard, you want them to bring them out. So you never sacrifice anything other than them. So Slum Reaper is just a worse version. This is an example of a card that is as good, but just not as efficient. So that's why it doesn't get, it doesn't make it into decks. So in this version, we'll use them. And I've used this card in a Marin deck because I didn't have a Merciless Executioner or whatever. And yeah, man, it's just as good. You know, a turn later and it costs more, so that's not great. But guess what? It's fine. Slum Reaper. Let's use them more.
Let's use them.
Okay. That's mine. That's yours.
Great. So yeah, let's talk about some 3-star of the deck. While you were going through this, I realized I forgot what is... I think, no doubt, the number one star of this deck. It never even occurred to me.
Really?
You
can say it when we get to it, and I'll look for it.
So I'll just skip ahead one then. So number 3 has been knocked out, and we'll start at number 2. That's going to be my new number three.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Yes, you know what I mean? Yeah, I gotcha. Yep.
So number 3 star of this deck, the Allies Teneb Bring 'Em Back deck, is Conjurer's Closet.
Oh, I love this card.
Right? 5 mana artifact. At the beginning of your end step, you may exile target creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control. Every turn, we get to activate our allies and all of the numerous abilities that are on them. We love it. 2nd star of the deck, Agadim Occultist, 2 and a black, human shaman ally, 0/2, tap. Put target creature card from an opponent's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control if its converted mana cost is less than or equal to the number of allies you control. One every turn for free, and like usually you're going to always have something good to go for. Big fan of that one.
Cool.
And like the number one card, I can't believe I didn't think of this before, Panharmonicon.
Oh my god.
Right? Like... this whole deck is about creatures entering the battlefield. 4 mana artifact. If an artifact or creature entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability on a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time.
Bonkers.
Man, just double ally triggers? Yes.
That's insane.
Please.
Yeah, that's arguably even completely unnecessary. You know what I mean? Like, it's so good. It's too good.
I think it's
crazy.
Abilities like this take the... I'll say this now. Like, the ally strategy as a whole is too flat. Like, you have a very limited supply because you need them in numbers, right?
Yeah.
And the more holes you fill with other support creatures, like your Reclamation Sages, for example, that's one less ally you have for the main strategy, and that weakens the entire deck overall. So we need to pump it up to high gear. That's why things like Conjurer's Closet, extra ETB effects, Panharmonicon, right? Now this takes it up to like a real deck level.
Yeah, Harmonicon though, right?
What?
It's not a harmonica. It's a harmonica.
Did I say Panharmonicon?
Yes.
Panharmonicon. Twice. Panharmonicon.
Panharmonicon.
But it's not, it is its own thing. It could have its own name. It's not a harmonica, nor a harmonica.
Yeah, but it's obviously based on a harmonic, like the harmonica. Like it's at a, they're at like a little concert. It's like a music thing.
Well,
all who listen hear their own song, a unique melody played just for them.
Yeah, because I know that when a lot of instruments are sounding good together, we can say that's very harmonious.
Okay, you know what? A harmony? Harmonic? It's still harmony, though.
But but there's not a Y on the end of this. Like, it's got a new suffix.
Harmonica, harmonicon, I would think.
I don't know,
harmonicon,
man.
But it's not a harmonica. Otherwise, it would be harmonica.
But we don't know if, like, is there a smaller instrument on Kaladesh called a panharmonica?
No, it's adding a suffix doesn't...
To a thing that doesn't exist, so it could have any name.
Well,
ever.
You're adding... No, you're taking the word harmonic, okay? You're adding a prefix and a suffix to it.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you that. Harmonics is the thing, and that is on.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Okay, I got you there, I think.
Until I get a definitive report.
We can get a definitive. They have a pronunciation guide. We should just look it up.
I don't want it because I think I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want to look things up if I think I'm wrong. I want to pretend I'm right and not look it up.
That's what's wrong with the world. Okay. You're right, though. Panharmonicon is great.
What? You said harmonicon.
No, I didn't. I said harmonicon.
Rewind that.
I said harmonicon, for sure.
I don't know. I think you said
harmonicon. Took special care to say
okay,
it there.
Okay. Anyway.
Anyways. Those are great cards. Now let's look at my three stars. The three stars of the Benchwarming B-list deck. Number three is Angel of Despair.
Ooh.
Which is a great card. And like I'd say a little while ago was an absolute staple in any Caridor/Teneb/deck. And I think may even still be. However, they have since created better versions of this card. Angel of Despair is 3 white, white, black, black. So it's pretty expensive. It's a 7 mana, 5/5 flying angel. When Angel of Despair enters the battlefield, destroy target permanent. Well, we have right now, we have a the 4 white, white, black, black Archon from, from Theros.
Is it Theros or was it Gatecrash?
I think it's Theros.
Okay.
Wait. Yeah, it's an Archon.
I don't know.
Those were in Theros. Anyways, it's the one that it comes in, it exiles something when it enters and when it leaves.
Yeah.
So that's for, I think it's only one more mana too. So that one is arguably better. But Angel of Despair is still a very fine card, and we're happy to have it, and it's actually really great in this card, in this deck rather. Next is another version of Eternal Witness. It's Green Warden of Mirasa for green for a 5/4 elemental. When it enters the battlefield, you can return target card from your graveyard to your hand, and when it dies, you can exile it, and if you do, return target card from your graveyard to your hand. So, you know, it's 6 mana. It's a 5/4 though, so it can actually start to put pressure on your opponents if it can get through an attack. But also it's going to enter the battlefield and return things to your hand, much like Skullwinder. But then in a pinch, you can do the exile trick and actually get it to return something again when it dies. And I thought when I saw this card that I would like never do that, because you want it in your graveyard, you want to reanimate it all the time. But there are definitely situations where it's like, okay, if I don't return this card to my hand and play it next turn, now, like, I'm going to lose the game.
Right.
And that does come up once in a while. So he's really great for that. So he's not only the recurring it and getting things back, but that little emergency lever on him is really great. And finally, the number one star of this deck, I think, is Deadbridge Chant. Deadbridge Chant. It's 4BG for an enchantment that says, when Deadbridge Chant enters the battlefield, put the top 10 cards of your library into your graveyard. At the beginning of your upkeep, choose a card at random in your graveyard. If it's a creature card, put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, put it into your hand. I included this in this deck because I've seen a lot of people talk about this card. A, that it's very good, and they put it in all their Golgari and
it is Abzan very decks. Good.
But a lot of people say it's 6-mana enchantment, and it's too, like, inefficient. It puts 10 cards in, sure, but you can fill your graveyard at that point. The 10 cards thing doesn't even do much. And then, I don't know.
But
I tend to think this card is really good, and it's really fun. And I love seeing this card when I play these types of decks.
You know what? I don't even think the 10 cards in the library is this card's thing. Like, I'm more interested in the fact that you're drawing a card every upkeep, or even better, putting it into play directly.
Yeah.
Like, every upkeep. Green and black. Black does that with some things, but you're going to pay life for it. And we can assume that anything that's in our graveyard is already very good. So, like, if it comes back to the battlefield, awesome.
Yeah, it's something you've already used, so you're fine with it, right?
Again, this should probably be in the ally build, but then you got to cut an ally or you cut something else. This is a
creature-heavy deck. I think there's over 40 creatures in this deck, too.
Yeah.
Because any ability you want in decks like this, you want them on a creature on an enter the battlefield or leave the battlefield trigger.
This is a way to get back... Like, if you haven't exiled your Green Warden, you might get that back.
Exactly. Yes.
Right? If you played your Gaze of Granite, you might get that back into your hand, ready to play again.
Agreed. It is the number one star for a reason. It's very versatile, and it can do a lot of things, and ends up really fueling your strategy. I love it. I love this card. I have it in my Carador deck. I think it's great.
You know what? I have cut this card too many times, and is in 0 decks. I must change this.
This is what I'm talking about, right? This is the whole reason I wanted to do this experiment. And I think this might be an entire show, is the B team. Is that, yeah, these are cards that I've cut from decks.
So many times.
So many times. But I like these cards. I like them. So why not put the restriction on that, like, I can only use cards that I've cut type of thing. And build a deck out of that and see how that goes. And, like, yeah, okay, it's not going to be the most efficient. Yeah, it's not going to be maybe even as good as the one you built before, but it's going to be pretty cool and maybe introduce you to some different strategies and some different cards that you wouldn't have thought of.
Neat.
We actually get a lot of people asking us for this type of thing where it's like, hey, can you guys do an episode where it's like budget versions of better, like more expensive cards and things like that? Well, yeah, this is kind of, this whole deck is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
Cool.
So did we have any surprises, any discoveries?
Well, I was surprised by a discovery that does not belong in my deck. It is not in my deck, but I do want to bring it up because I think it's really neat. Nantuko Cultivator. This is 3 and a green for an insect druid. It is 2/2. When Nantuko Cultivator enters the battlefield, you may discard any number of land cards. Put that many +1/+1 counters on Nantuko Cultivator and draw that many cards. So at the time of casting this guy, when he ETBs,
yeah,
you get to trade up all the lands in your hand for other cards. So if you are in the habit of drawing a bunch of cards and you just got a mitt full of cards, we know from the last week's episode, green tends to draw cards, or a few episodes ago anyway. Anyway, we discussed that, like, a lot of green's draw comes in huge batches at a time. So if you've drawn 10 cards or so, cast this guy and trade in all the lands for better stuff, and this guy also gets big.
This guy would probably be pretty good in the old Gitrog monster.
No doubt this guy would.
Yeah, this is a neat ability. You loot lands only.
Yeah.
Right?
All your lands at once on ETB.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you want.
That's cool. So, I mean, you're probably not going to have a, like, 6 lands in your hand or whatever, but if you had 2, maybe even three at the end of the game. And you're like, okay, well, I'll draw three. And then, yeah, maybe one of them will be a land, but that's okay.
Or maybe if you're in any sort of like rune kind of deck and you're just like, you know, at this point, I'm just going to hang on to these lands. And I'm going to flicker my Nantuko and trade them in.
Yep. This is an interesting card. What a good discovery. There's a lot of, I bet you there's a bunch of cool decks that would like to have have this guy.
Nantuko Cultivator.
And he gets bigger, right? That's like, you know, that's a side ability for sure, but yeah. You know, some that helps. I had one, okay, they're not real discoveries, but again, these are more surprises. So Skyblinder Staff, this is not a great card, admittedly. It's one mana for an equipment that says equipped creature gets +1/+0 and can't be blocked by creatures with flying. And it has equip 3. So the equip cost is quite high, but the casting cost is low. But obviously, yes, the equip cost is the more important cost there. Like, the lower that is, the better equipment gets usually. But on a flyer, Skyblinder Staff is just, it can't be blocked except for creatures with reach.
Which that's great.
Aren't as prolific in Commander. So this is good in a, and I've seen it run actually in Yleva decks.
Yeah.
In any of these Dragon Commander decks, the ones like Teneb, the ones that there's, because there's a whole cycle of them. I think this is a decent card because you put that on there and then it can get in for its ability, right? Definitely the three equip costs is, it does hurt it. And obviously you're probably more likely to want something like Whisper Silk Cloak or whatever. But you know, it's just if you've got all the ones that you have in your possession and you found, oh hey, I've got this common from Gatecrash, and it actually can be played in a deck where your commander is a flyer and wants to get in for damage. So
true.
Try it out, maybe. Who knows? And finally, there's another one here. I don't want to go too deep on this card, but Diabolic Servitude is a card that I've always liked. I kind of know what it does. It reanimates something, right? It's an enchantment. It's 3 and a black. But there's so much text on it, and especially on the original, there's like a lot of text on it. And it's really hard to read. But on the newer version, it's Oracle text. But this card is just animate dead, except that when the creature dies, you get this card back in your hand.
That's what it does?
And without the -1 thing. But if this gets killed, you exile it. You exile the creature.
If they destroy the enchantment, you exile the enchantment?
I'll just read what it says.
Okay.
I thought I'd be saving time by just paraphrasing it, but instead I'm ruining
everything.
I'm
still confused by this card.
Yeah, so Diabolic Servitude. It's an enchantment. It's 3 and a black. It says, when Diabolic Servitude enters the battlefield, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
So they're not attached.
No.
You just get one, then the other.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not an aura. When the creature is put into the battlefield with Diabolic Servitude... When the creature put onto the battlefield with Diabolic Servitude dies, exile it and return Diabolic Servitude to its owner's hand.
Okay, so the creature you've animated can't die. It can only be exiled.
Right.
And then the Servitude comes back to your hand.
Comes back.
Great.
When Diabolic Servitude leaves the battlefield, exile the creature put onto the battlefield with Diabolic Servitude.
So if anything happens to the enchantment otherwise, you also will exile that creature.
Right.
So you've marked that creature to be exiled.
To be exiled, but we're going to use it as much as we can before that happens.
And if anything does happen to it, we will get Servitude back.
Yeah. So like, there's a reason I haven't really been using this card a lot in Reanimator decks, obviously, because you don't want to exile
it's
your
so
creatures.
It's so confusing.
But it is pretty good that you just get this recurrable thing that will always, you know, you'll just have it and you can keep doing it if you can get it back to your hand or whatever. Anyways, I think it's neat because you return Diabolic Servitude to its owner's hand, right? Anyways, if you're okay with exiling a couple creatures here and there, it can be a good form of like additional recursion.
Oh my God. You just made me think of that's where our egg podcast crosses over with this podcast is the exile zone.
The exile. Oh my God. Path to exile.
That's it. That's our magic egg podcast.
Our magic egg podcast.
We feature dragon's egg and rock egg.
Rock egg. And all of the eggs in the deck eggs.
Yes.
It's not about that deck, but we do often refer to it.
Yeah, we also refer to real eggs.
Yeah, of course we do. That's really what it's about. Before we get to the budget report, just going to mention Wizard's Tower again here real quick. Dave over there has been doing great job, great stuff.
If you see him at a GP, this guy is one of the hardest working magic store owners I've ever known. This guy is going to GPs constantly. So go say hello. Give him a hello from us if you're ever at a GP. Go to the Wizards Tower booth.
They love hearing from listeners of our show. Always. And Dave always tells me whenever anyone comes up.
Yeah.
He'll email us and let us know that.
And can I just say, I don't know if you realize how amazing it feels to get a message from Dave. You may think you're just like, I'm just going to say hello. That's nothing. But like, oh man, it feels so good.
It feels great.
When Dave's like, oh, P.S., hello from this person. From whatever. It's like, oh man.
It happens every time. It's so great.
Yeah.
I also want to mention, we don't say this enough, but it really should happen. You can sell your cards to Wizards Tower too, whether it's live at a GP or just over the internet. You can select the cards that you own and sell them back to them, and for store credit or for actual money and stuff like that. It's awesome, and it helps the whole community of us Commander players when you sell the stuff you don't want and get the stuff you do want. It just creates more, it's business, right? Supply, demand.
Supply
for Wizard Tower, which, they can sell and make more money and then get cards that we want. It's great.
Pass Please. More savings on to us.
Exactly. So yeah, use Tower of Brews. That's the code if you're going to order from them. And they're a really, really great store.
I have nothing more to add. That's true. That's all true.
Great. Okay, so let's get to the budget report.
This is the part of the show where we put all of the cards into a structure we made with elastic bands and straws, drop it from three stories up, and see if the ones inside crack or if they stay together.
That's for eggs, and you know it.
Oh, no, you fool. Great. So I didn't put Panharmonicon. I want to say Harmonicon. That's what's instinctive to me. I didn't put that in here, so that's going to adjust it. That's a few bucks here, so we'll have to make a cut. But the current deck comes in at $49.22, so we got to cut something to fit anything in. Most expensive card in the deck.
Dude, Panharmonicon, Canadian, is like $8 now.
Holy crow.
That's Canadian, so it's probably still around $5, $6 US. But anyways.
Right. Well, I wouldn't make it into the deck because we already have Eldrazi Displacer. It's the most expensive card in the deck. It's a $5 card. 2 and a white, 3/3, devoid. 2 and a colorless, exile another target creature, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control, tapped. Yeah, right? Like if we have some incidental colorless mana in there, that's amazing for allies, right? Just boom, 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 as many as you can. $5 card, though, probably need to cut it, though. For Panharmonicon. Panharmonicon would be way better than this.
Yeah.
Drana, Liberator of Malakir, 1 black-black, legendary vampire ally, 2/3, flying, first strike. Whenever Drana, Liberator of Malakir, deals combat damage to a player, put a +1/+1 counter on each attacking creature you control. This is in standard right now. I think that's why this is about almost $5.
Wait, Battle for Zendikar is still in standard?
No, this is Oath.
No.
Is this not Oath?
No, this is Battle.
Although this is not in there anymore. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, standard legal. Okay, never mind. I'm wrong.
Battle is...
Oh, because they extended it back, right?
No, I think Battle always is... It's we lost Origins. No, I thought we lost... I don't know, man.
I thought we lost Battle. Maybe
I'm so confused right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a bit too expensive. I hate cutting an ally. It's a very good ally. But sometimes you got to do. The next one I've got here... is the Flickerwisp. 1 white-white. It's an elemental, flying, 3/1. When Flickerwisp enters the battlefield, exile another target permanent, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. This is just another way to do that ability. We definitely want more abilities to do that, but this one's like 350. Who knew this thing got so expensive? I guess because it flies and it's decent stats. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's been reprinted in Commander product as an uncommon. It was in Modern Masters.
I guess it's just, we've
got
our...
Is there a deck that's using it or something?
I have no idea.
That's an expensive uncommon.
We have our Elk. We're happy with the Elk. We'll save 350 here. So we cut Drana, we cut Flickerwisp.
Put in the Felidar thing?
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. We can probably squeeze in Panharmonicon that way.
Also, Flickerwisp is freaky looking. I've never really liked it very much.
Too many legs.
It's what's with those legs? You got a nice bird thing going on up at the top there, and then I go down a little bit, and it's like Creep Town. It's like all of a sudden I'm in a horror movie. I'm in I'm in like the, I don't know, Saw or something. I don't know what
like,
it is.
Like that top, the top wings there, that's the Tinder profile picture.
Yeah, you then look you, at that and then you get catfished with all this creepy centipede nonsense going on down here. What's this?
No, man, don't get catfished with the Flicker Wisp.
Yeah, Flicker Wisp will catfish you big time.
Yeah.
And I know they did me. Okay. For me, my deck is cheaper than yours.
Oh, so since it's all B-listers, it ought to be what, 25 bucks?
I know, it probably should be. It said it's 45 bucks. And actually, like, all of these are cuts pretty much. Number one most expensive card is Predatory Nightstalker. I did not know this card was expensive because it appears as a common in when you look at it on, like, Gather and stuff like that. Anyways, the image is a common. Anyways, Predatory Nightstalker is 3/2 black for a 3/2, and it says when Predatory Nightstalker enters the battlefield, you may have target opponent sacrifice a creature. That card is for some reason worth $6.
Oh, because it's from Portal.
Exactly, it's from Portal. Portal Second Age. It appears as a common because it was in Vintage Masters, and that was only online. But this doesn't look like it's online, does it? It looks like a real card. Anyways. $6 for sure. Cut it. I put this in because it's a worse version of Fleshbag Marauder and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely cut this card. Save $6. Now we're down to 39. What's next? We've got Magus of the Will, $5. It's 2 and a black for a 3/3 that says pay 2 and a black and tap them. Exile Magus of the Will. Until end of turn, you may play cards from your graveyard. If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere this turn, exile that card instead. Obviously, this is Yawgmoth's Will on a creature. Definitely cut this for $5. We don't need this ability. It's not even that good in Commander. Yawgmoth's Will is a card that's great in, you know, Vintage for Storm decks and all this sort of stuff. So we don't need it in Commander. It's still good. Like, it's still a good ability if you, you know...
You'll know
work it towards it, but
if you're the deck that wants Magus of the Will or like Yawgmoth's Will, like if you've built your deck for that, you'll know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so don't worry about this card. We'll cut that as well. Look at that. That's $11 gone off.
Wow.
Just like that. And finally, one we talked about, Angel of Despair. This card's $350. And like I said, there are better versions. If you're building a real deck, you're probably not going to, I mean, don't worry about this because I can't remember the name of the card now. Vengeful Archon, maybe?
Is I that think that's called? It.
Maybe it's not called that. Anyways, Angel of Despair is $350 and it is a good card. Like, it is kind of worth $350, but I think there are just cheaper versions of it. But that's this whole deck. Anything expensive in this deck is like, well, there's a better version of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might be, it might actually be cheaper. It might not be. No, Vengeful Archon is a different card. Never mind. Yeah, so that's it, though. You cut those three cards, and you're cutting basically $15 from the deck. You can definitely make a B-team version budget very easily.
Yeah.
But again, I just want to remind everyone who's maybe thinking about doing this, it doesn't mean your deck is going to be bad. It just means that it'll be slightly less efficient, but it's still going to do a lot of cool things. I mean, look at Angel of Despair. This card's great.
And you're going to draw less hate.
Way less hate. Especially if you tell people it's the B team.
That right? might lead to more wins.
I'm very much good. So yeah, that's this episode. Wow.
That's this episode.
We recorded it like, I don't know, almost 2 times.
We could have recorded 3 in this time.
Yeah. Had some issues with this one. But you know what? I think we came through in the end and these are 2 fun decks.
You know what? This is the B team episode.
No. This is the A-team episode. The one we recorded before was the B-team.
Oh, the one that got
deleted. This is the real one.
This is the real one. Yes, yeah. Yes.
This is the good one here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's it for us. We'll be back with a Commander interview, obviously, as always.
Yeah.
Go check us out on Patreon.
Sure. Watch us on Twitch. I'm excited to get drafted on Twitch once Aether Revolt drops.
I haven't drafted in a while because I kind of got burnt out on draft.
No, Matt Meeman. I think I have...
No, Matt Meeman.
Not Matt Me. I may have a limitless draft hunger. I don't know.
I tend to... I've said this before, I think. I tend to draft like 4 or 5 times and that's about enough for me.
Not even close. I'm just getting started.
I enjoy it. I just get tired of it.
Not me.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
If you want to contact us, you can do so on Twitter @CommandersBrew. Individually, we are
@AndyHullbone
and I'm @SeanTabaris. or send us a Gmail, commandersbrew@gmail.com.
Also, you can check out all of our decks on tappedout.net/users/commandersbrew. And you can go to patreon.com if you'd like to donate and help support the show.
And if you want to check all this out in one place, go to commandersbrew.com for all this info. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Commander Interview. As you know, we will always interview one of the commanders. Unfortunately, Andy couldn't be here. He's out at the hardware store getting his pan re-Teflon'd. But we have here with us Teneb the Harvester. Welcome.
Oh, it's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Teneb, what an honor. What a treat having you in here. A dragon. I just love dragons as a whole. I think everybody loves dragons in the game of Magic.
Oh, man. You're telling me. I'm just so excited that anyone's even talking to me, honestly.
Oh, we're happy to. We're happy you came into the interview. I'm sorry we were so late getting you in here. We had a little technical difficulties. We had to restart a few times. So
yeah, I noticed you guys did a Caridor Super Brew before me, but that's fine. That's fine. I'm used to going after that guy.
Oh, yeah. We did do a Caridor Super Brew at one point. I was just referring to the fact that we were a little bit late getting this episode recorded, so you've been in our hallway for a few hours.
I've been in that hallway for a lot longer than a few hours is what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? I've been waiting for this interview for years.
Oh.
Okay? Years? 2011. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. No one wants to talk to Teneb anymore. Used to be Teneb, number one guy. Now, Teneb, no one like.
You know what? Don't sell yourself short, Teneb. I bet you there's lots of people who would love to talk to you, us included. That's why we got you here. Our listeners want to hear all about Teneb.
Well, great. I'm here to tell them all about Teneb.
Okay, Teneb. What gave you your start? What's Teneb all about?
Teneb is all about the graveyards.
Yeah, so a graveyard recursion strategy. Yeah, we love this, right?
Yeah.
You got to do combat damage to a player, and then you can spend some mana, and then you can get a creature back.
Yeah, what are you saying?
No, I'm just saying, like, this is the abilities that
I
you
get
have.
It. I get it. It's a lot of hurdles to jump over. I get it.
No, I didn't mean it that way.
Well, that's what you said.
It's what I said. Those are facts, though. Like, those are just the facts.
Oh, okay. Well, here's a fact. This sucks.
Wait,
this interview sucks and
that
you're bad
not
at
a fact.
It.
That is an
Here's
opinion.
A fact. Your shirt's stupid and your hair looks dumb.
Okay, so Teneb.
How about that for a fact?
Those are opinions.
Those are real things. Those are real things, and Teneb's noticed those.
Teneb, I'm sorry if I've offended you.
Yeah, well, you have, but please don't go anywhere and please keep doing the interview. I'm sorry I said anything.
I'm sorry too, Teneb. I would like to get this interview back on track.
Okay.
I would like to just
Sorry, this
Wash
is. I feel like this might be also one of the reasons why I don't get a lot of interviews lately. But like, anyways, let's keep going here.
Okay. Can I offer you some Triscuits with cheese on it?
Yes. Oh my god, I love Triscuits with cheese.
Okay, let me just. Okay, we had a cheese plate here somewhere. We usually have a cheese plate for our guests. I was gonna go get some more cheese, but I don't know where it went.
Oh, so okay.
I guess someone.
So you
got
don't have
to it,
it
before. Mm-hmm. I guess someone already got to it.
So maybe there's none left for old Teneb, huh? Maybe Teneb's
You know what? No, hang on. I think I might have an apple in the crisper.
You got this for the A-list guest, I bet.
No, I think I can.
I bet Caridor had a lot when he was here.
How about a couple of plain saltines? I got a few of those. I can open up a package of those.
That is a worse version of a Triscuit, and you know it.
I know it. I know it is a worse version of a Triscuit. And I can put
I'll take them. Okay, I'll take what I can get.
You know what's
days,
fun? You know
okay.
what's fun? Look at this. I'm going to put some peanut butter on there.
That's good.
Put two of them, make a little sandwich out of it, and if you squeeze it, little worms come out of the holes, little peanut butter worms.
Listen, peanut butter is the better version of butter. We all know. We also all know that. So, you know what? Teneb is feeling pretty good about that right now.
You know, Teneb, I think you just need a boost because I think you are an excellent commander. And although we're talking about second stringers, you know, bench warmers.
We were talking about second stringers? That's why I'm here?
That's the theme. That's sort of one of the themes.
I mean, I know, but I'm insulted, but I'm also happy to be here.
But what we came up with was that although these sometimes get overlooked, they're excellent, excellent cards. You're in great company, right? What do we have? Gaze of Granite, Angel.
That's crappy, pernicious deed.
Angel of Despair.
it's not that, that's not as good, that Archon guy.
You can't remember his name either.
I can't remember his name either. Nobody knows.
But we know Angel of Despair's name. Do we know Archon's name?
Yeah, I guess.
Right? We don't know Archon's name.
Yeah, but you know what else card is in this deck? Ondu Giant. That guy is just a much worse version of all those elves. All of them.
Cultivate.
Yeah, right? He's not even as good as that. Costs more.
Yeah, he does. He does.
They also got a 5-mana 3/3 in here that draws you a card when he comes into play.
That's too expensive.
That's too expensive to pay for that.
Yeah, what about that?
This is what I'm bringing out of the graveyard. Look at what I got to work with over here.
Ah, oh, Teneb.
It's very difficult. I'm having a hard time with it.
Well, Teneb, do you mind if I get your contact information for future? We will want to do, we're always looking to expand. Do you mind if I get your contact information? Because I'm applying for a job and I need like a contact info, like a secondary emergency contact.
Oh,
I use my mom for my first emergency contact. I need a secondary emergency contact. Could I use your name for that? In case something happens to me and my mom's busy.
I was real excited you wanted me to come back on the show again and to be a guest or whatever.
Hey, how about this? If we start an egg podcast, you get to be on that.
All right, I'm in.
Okay, thanks, Teneb. Thank you.